Hello, everyone, and welcome to the third part of our four-part professional development podcast series, the first 6 weeks of preschool. I'm Beth from Teaching Strategies, and I'm so glad to have you back. In our first two podcasts, we looked at some really big ideas for preschool, including the importance of formative assessment as the basis for intentional teaching, and the ways that your classroom rules can be used not just to help guide children's behavior, but also to support their social-emotional development. Now, you may recall, I mentioned in podcast one that things like assessment and classroom rules may not be considered as important as other items on your overall to-do list, things like individualizing learning and guiding children's social-emotional development. But I hope that as we've worked our way through these first two podcasts, you've come to understand that, in fact, formative assessment is essential for individualizing learning, and that involving the children in establishing your shared expectations for how you'll treat each other this year is key to supporting their social-emotional development. In this podcast, I want to focus on some other important people, namely the children's families, as well as some important aspects of the places for learning, that is your indoor and outdoor classroom spaces. Let me take a moment here to explain that when I talk about outdoor classroom spaces, I mean that to include whatever outdoor play space you may have, as well as any other outdoor spaces you and the children have access to on a regular basis. As we here at Teaching Strategies hear from and visit preschool programs around the country, we are repeatedly struck by the great variability in the outdoor spaces that teachers and children have access to. Your outdoor space is dependent not just on the type of program you're a part of and the age range of the children you have there, but also your geography, your climate, whether your program is in an urban, suburban, small town, or rural area, what your surrounding neighborhood is like. So it's always really important to think about what's available to you and how you and the children can make the most of it. Everywhere we visit, we see teachers who are being intentional and innovative in the ways that they make use of their outdoor spaces. And we see children who are benefiting because of this planning, like the schools in Florida that keep their easels and water table outside nearly all year long, or those in the Northeast and Midwest and Alaska and Canada, where children use ice and snow as building materials, or those all over the place that have created vegetable and flower gardens that the children can tend to throughout the growing season. The point is that you need to look for ways to make the most of your outdoor spaces as a learning environment, just as you do with your indoor learning environment. Children need to move. They need to explore. They need to discover. All of these things are so easily accomplished by simply moving your learning experiences outside. So look for ways to take your learning experiences, such as choice time, outside. Take your intentional teaching cards outside. Take your mighty minutes outside. The truth is that there are very few learning experiences that take place inside that you can't replicate outside. When considering ways to make the most use of whatever outdoor areas are available to you, you will want to make sure that they're safe and accessible for all the children in your class. You'll want to pay attention to the equipment that you use outdoors, particularly if there's something that remains outside exposed to the elements. Check regularly to make sure everything is clean and in good repair. But of course, there are many times when all of you are inside, regardless of whether you're working inside or out. The point is to always be looking for ways that your learning environment supports your learning objectives. as we move on to discussing the people who are important to your children's learning, I want to take a moment to add a quick word specifically about non-English speaking families and their children who are English language or dual language learners. If there are children and families in your program who speak a different language from you, then yes, your job of communicating with them is made more difficult. But always remember that the most important aspects of helping people feel welcomed and valued cross language barriers. A genuine smile, a warm greeting, an accepting environment. Also, remember that special invitations are often more valued and thus more readily accepted than general ones. Issuing a blanket statement such as, "All are welcome," is nice. But compare that to something like, "I wanted to personally invite you to our classroom open house next Tuesday. I'm eager to show you some of the many things that Annie is working on at school." Here's a real-life example of that strategy. Several years ago, I was working at a school where we conducted an annual improvement process that was to include input from families. The first year I was there, I issued what I thought was a lovely open invitation saying, "We value family input. Anyone who wants to join us is welcome at our planning meeting." Well, no one came. But the next year, in addition to sending out the blanket invitation, I personally contacted a few families that I thought could offer some valuable ideas and interesting perspectives. Every single one of them not only showed up for the meeting, but they all contributed in ways that I never could have thought of on my own. One of the most important messages for me that came out of that meeting is what I came to think of as the wisdom of just because they love their child. It goes something like this. Just because a family lives in a certain neighborhood tells you nothing about how much they love their child. Just because a family has a certain structure tells you nothing about how much they love their child. Just because a family is of a certain skin color or ethnic heritage, speaks a certain language, or follows a certain religion tells you nothing about how much they love their child. The fact is, all children and families, regardless of what descriptors can be applied to them, they all deserve to feel welcomed, valued, respected, capable. So here's an exercise for you to help you determine if your classroom is indeed a place that welcomes all children and families. On a piece of paper, make two columns. At the top of one column, write, "I want children and families to feel dot, dot, dot." At the top of the other column, write, "I don't want children and families to feel dot, dot, dot." Then make a list with at least 5 words that can complete each of those sentences. For example, you may think, "I want children and families to feel welcomed, valued, respected. And I don't want families to feel ignored, neglected, unappreciated." Then look around your learning spaces. Think about the messages you are sending through your learning environment. Start listing what you see and hear and think about that would lead to those positive feelings on your first list. And whatever those things are, keep doing them. Then think about ways that your environment might be inadvertently leading to those feelings that you don't want to provoke, and add those to the second list. Whatever it is that makes it onto that second list, well, you're going to want to find ways to move those items to the first one. Here's an example. Perhaps one of those items on your second list is that you don't want children to feel rushed, or stressed or overwhelmed. Think about the message it sends if every day, at a predetermined, yet to children pretty arbitrary, a predetermined time when they're told to end their projects, to dismantle their constructions, to not just put away their work, but sometimes to completely destroy it. You may inadvertently be sending the message that tidying up is more important than investing in long-term, multi-day extended projects. What could you do instead to either let them continue the project the next day, or if that's not a reasonable possibility, to make a record of it with something like a photograph or a short video? Eventually, expand your thinking to include other messages you send through the things like your daily schedule, the ways you communicate with families, both informally and formally, the visitors you invite to your classroom, and the ways you celebrate the children's learning. If you feel comfortable doing so, share your lists with a colleague or your supervisor to get additional perspective on the messages you're sending. Because the fact is that sometimes we don't see ourselves or interpret our own actions in the same ways that others do. Throughout the coming year, revisit this exercise and add the word lately to your questions. What have I done lately to cause children and families to feel a certain way? Always being intentional in the ways you send those positive messages. And speaking of the coming year, join me next time for our fourth and final podcast, where we will turn our attention to the concept of time in preschool.